sweet artery. Oh, you good girl?
I know you're a good girl.
Whoa, look at all these toys. Somebody gonna pick up all these toys in the living room?
Yes, Daddy, somebody will.
No, I know that somebody will.
Dinner's almost ready.
Terrific. Let's go wash up, huh?
Good forensics and three witnesses who can put them in the area.
They're real bad guys, Daddy.
Whoa, real bad guys.
Still gonna be able to have dinner with Sunny and Caroline tomorrow?
No problem. We'll be finished with the paperwork by 5. Sunny told me they've already got a sitter. You expecting someone?
This is the Vice of Miami podcast, where your hosts, Mark and Tim, review the iconic TV show Miami Vice. Set against the backdrop of Miami's vibrant nightlife and drug trade, Miami Vice followed Detective Sonny Crockett and Ricardo Tubbs and the entire OCB team as they battled the scourge of the mint in late 80s. With its unforgettable characters, eclectic fashion, and epic soundtrack, Miami Vice captured the spirit of the times. Join us as we dive deep into the world of Miami Vice and explore the show's enduring legacy.
Welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast for show number 59. Mark and I are always glad you're joining us. We hope you enjoyed our last show covering Streetwise. This is our Halloween episode, a little early, and we may have some special guests later on. So as always, sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast covering Season 3, Episode 11, Forgive Us Our Debts.
And this episode is written by Gustave Renninger, directed by Jan Eliasberg. The original air date is December 12th, 1986, and it's the 55th episode overall.
The plot for this episode is new evidence in the case against a convicted murderer that Crockett helped put on death row may exonerate him, but a pro-death penalty attorney general doesn't want to cooperate.
And as we've done in the past for this episode, we're going to focus on one of the main cast of Miami Vice, and this one is going to cover John Diehl, who will be making his exit soon. Tim, tell us a little bit about Mr. Diehl.
Yes, John Diehl played Detective Larry Zito, and he was born May 1st, 1950 in Cincinnati, Ohio. He went on to college where he majored in visual arts, but was introduced to acting in a night class. His failure in the art class in an A grade in acting led him to begin performing plays in a theater for free. Early in his career, he played bit parts in movies such as Escape from New York, Stripes, National Lampoon's Vacation, DC Cab, and on TV in Cagney and Lacey, Hill Street Blues, and Hunter. His breakout role was as Zito in Miami Vice, which began in 1984. During his tenure on Vice, he became bored with spending 9 months out of the year in Miami, and he felt he did not have enough to do. Therefore, he began boxing, compiling a 3-1 record before retiring in 1986. After his run on Vice ended, Diehl did guest TV appearances on Beauty and the Beast, Nash Bridges, also with Don Johnson, 18 Wheels of Justice, and The Shield. Movie appearances included Con Air, Nixon, where he played G. Gordon Liddy. He appeared in several other shows as well. Diehl is currently working on the AMC psychological thriller Dark Winds, which was just renewed for third season in September of this year. Diehl credits his sister Sarah Hope for influencing his professional career. In 1992, he married singer Julie Christensen, who has worked with Leonard Cohen. They have a son, Jackson, born in 1993.
Stripes. He was the one I figured I'd join before I got drafted, sir.
Yes, that's him.
And going back to Stripes, last episode, John Paxton, we said that he was
Bill Stripes. Paxton.
Bill Paxton. I did a little research, and he did not even maybe a 3 or 4 second appearance in the mud wrestling scene. He was one of the guys in the background of that of Stripes. So I'm like, I don't remember him in Stripes, but sure enough, he was for all of 3 seconds. Anyways, the actual guest stars here, which we'll go over quickly, is Guy Boyd as Frank Hackman, Bill Raymond as Tommy Barkley, D.W. Moffat as A.G. Tom Waldman, Guy Marano as Carmen Albero, Lazaro Perez as Father Lafrano, Olga Carlatos as Felicia Diaz, and Val Bisaglio as Gus Alberio. And our co-stars are Steve Gang as Bierce and Teresa Blake as Donna. Okay, let's get right into the discussion for Forgive Us Our Debts. We've got a flashback here to Miami in 1980, where Crockett and one of his old partners named Frankel, they pull up to Frankel's house, and then they're discussing some case that they recently dealt with, and then Frankel gets out, Crockett pulls away. Frankel goes in to his family, his kids there watching TV, playing with toys, and then cut out to outside, we see some shady guy lurking in the shadows. He puts on a mask over his face. And then while Frankel and his wife are getting ready for dinner, they're still talking about this case. And his kid says, it's a really bad guy. Yeah, it's a bad guy, bad guy. I'm going to put him away. And then the doorbell rings. And Frankel's like, you expect anybody? So yeah, let's not, you know, be a cop, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. Let's just go answer the door. So Frankel answers the door, and then he gets blown away twice. Wife in the background is screaming. If you noticed, before the bell rang, the wife was asking about being able to get together with Sonny and Caroline. And then I think,
yes, Frankel, I did hear that.
Frankel's like, yeah, he's got a babysitter for his son. So when I was first watching it, I'm like, wait a minute, this is out of continuity. But then I'm like, oh yeah, flashback here. So
yes, flashback.
Tim, take us back to the present in 1986.
Right. So now we're with Crockett, and he's on the St. Vitus with his lady du jour named Donna. On TV, they see a debate for Attorney General between Thomas Waldman, who is in favor of the death penalty, Police Chief Walter Davis, who favors public executions, and Michael Claiborne, an ACLU attorney, who is against the death penalty. Quite the polar opposites. What could go wrong here?
Exactly. What could go wrong, right? I mean, these guys are like, no, I'm for it. I'm for it. No, I'm against it.
It's still in the news today. It's still in the news today, but not as prevalent as it was then.
Right.
So the news broadcast then turns to Frank Hackman, who's in jail. He's on death row. Donna wants to change the channel, but Crockett says, hold on. Then Hackman states he is innocent, but that he believes his execution is right and just, calling it God's will. And he wants it to count for something, explaining that he hopes with his death people someday realize that killing even in the name of justice is wrong. Crockett turns off the TV. He is upset or disgusted, and it's nothing that 20,000 volts wouldn't cure. At a diner later, Tubbs meets up with Crockett, and the vibe is essentially good riddance to Hackman when he fries. Castile stopped by and wants Crockett to see Father Lafrano from St. Ives Church about new information about Hackman, and Sonny was, no, this is a done deal. Just talk to him.
So here we go at St. Ives Church. Lafrano is expressing to Crockett and Castile that a parishioner, who's going to remain nameless, confessed to being with Hackman in Daytona on the night of the said murder, Frankel's murder. He's afraid an innocent man is going to be executed, rightfully so, if this is true. And then this person apparently came forward because they're dying and cannot live with their conscience any longer. So let's keep that in mind, people, because they're dying and can't live with their conscience. Again, Lafrano, the good pastor here, refuses to give the name who it is. Crockett is suspicious and skeptical, as always, especially when the father says that the person feared for their and their family's life if they went to the police. Crockett makes no secret of his skepticism to Castillo, especially since it was pretty much his partner that was blown away.
Has confessed to being in Daytona with Frank Hackman the night the detective was murdered. I'm afraid an innocent man may be executed on Friday.
That's it? Well, by all means, let's run right over to the parole board. What do you say, huh?
Can you identify the prisoner?
I cannot violate the sanctity of the confessional. He has released me to say only that much.
So why is this guy coming forward now?
He's very sick, possibly dying. He read about Hackman's date coming up, and he decided his conscience would not allow him to go on.
Marty. The good father here is being played. Frank Hackman blew away my partner in front of his wife and kids, and he deserves to get whatever's coming to him.
So later on, driving in the Ferrari, Crockett explaining to Tubbs here that in 1979, he and Frankel were assigned to an armored car robbery case, which was committed by Hackman and his crew. They went under and had a deal set up with Hackman, but Frankel's cover was blown, and he was killed before they could pinch Hackman for the robbery, which in turn Hackman on death row, obviously. So Crockett doubles down pretty much on Hackman's guilt.
So now we have Crockett and Tubbs stopping by the office of aspiring Attorney General Waldman, and he was the DA, and let him know what the good pastor had for information. Waldman says he knows Hackman is guilty, but the circumstantial evidence that Crockett said we just convicted him on, it doesn't really faze Waldman. He's not going to open this case because the election is forthcoming and he's running on a pro-death penalty stance. Crockett says the case was dumped on him, but he has to do it right.
Right. And I mean, I'm thinking even a dead partner doesn't cloud judgment in right versus wrong here.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep. Waldman is steadfast in not wanting to retry on something he has a platform in favor of. Even Tubbs is miffed, counselor. Now we move to OCB, where Crockett briefs the vice crew that Waldman won't play ball. Castillo says no more info from the father. He wants the church staked out and everyone is to be identified. Switek says Hackman is going to be a crispy critter in 2 days. Not a lot of time to get work done. Before Crockett leaves, Castillo gives him a note to go visit someone that Crockett says that they don't have anything to talk about. I bet you could guess who that was.
I wonder, huh? So here we go. Crockett makes what seems like a long drive, even going from the city towards South Beach. If you could notice, they had the cruise ships there, and he's driving eastbound.
Yes, I saw that.
So he was going the wrong direction. But anyway, he's going to Rayford Prison here, which actually is a prison just outside the city, west of Miami Airport, maybe 5-10 minutes. But anyways, we've got a great song in the background here by Peter Gabriel playing. Awesome, awesome song. But anyway, so Crockett finally meets up with Hackman, who starts pretty much to wax poetic about not placing blame onto Crockett for him being in prison. And Crockett's pretty much having none of it. It's like, yeah, I don't feel guilty for putting you here because you did what you did. Hackman here admits to killing others, but not Frankel. Awesome.
It's good to see you.
Say it, Frank.
There's no need for hard feelings, bro. I've made my peace. I know why I'm here.
Why'd you ask me to come here?
A man's right. Faces accusers. Not many people have the luxury of knowing the exact hour of their death.
I'm losing interest.
You didn't put me here. I want you to know that. There'll come a time when you'll ask for forgiveness to make your peace with God. And I want you to remember that I don't hold you accountable.
Now, that's dang nice of you, Frank.
Good acting job here. So now we're at the church, and the vice crew is outside running tags of parishioners and taking notes of who's going in. Gina is dressed up as a nun, and Switek is alone, entering info into their computer here. Trudy is taking pictures of everyone coming and going, and then we see the high-tech, and I put that in quotes, high-tech ways of getting quick arrest info from back then. Basically a fax machine and dot matrix printers and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, no Zito around. He was at OCB for a quick few seconds, but didn't say a word. But anyways, many bad guys here are noted. And the last one seems very interesting to Vice. Why is that?
Well, then back at, after their stakeout's done, Trudy gives a rundown on one of the parishioners, Gus Albiero. Quick scene shifts to Gus's repair shop where Crockett and Tubbs go to talk to Gus. Crockett and Tubbs started putting the press to good old Gus on the fact that he was the nail in the coffin to getting Hackman. Gus says he only testified to the intent of Hackman. Crockett knows something isn't right and presses more on Gus. Gus says Hackman was indeed in Daytona during the murder, but he wanted him dead anyway because he slept with his wife. Gus knows who did the killing, but he says his family would be wiped out if he said who. Gus says that he has cancer. I believe it was pancreatic cancer. So it doesn't really matter, essentially. And he knows how Hackman is spiritually, at least.
Wait a minute, Gus. You were the nail in the coffin. We didn't have enough evidence to send him up without your testimony. You know that.
Yeah. Got something on your chest, Gus?
The man's about to watch his last sunset, Gus. Did he kill him?
He was with me in Daytona.
You perjured yourself?
Why?
He was making it with my wife. I wanted to kill him myself.
So who really killed Franco?
I got a new wife, family. I'd be dead in a couple of hours if I told you that.
So now we're back at the DA Waldman's office. Armed with their new information, Crockett and Tubbs want Waldman to at least stay the execution until this could all be ironed out. And Waldman's not going to budge. He's not having anything of it. And only the governor technically can stay in execution, which is right. And he's not budging. Waldman's not budging. And Crockett and Tubbs are asking, what's it going to take to open, you know, reopen this case? So he says, two corroborating witnesses. And then, boom, Crockett and Tubbs, they've got their... They're armed with their mission, so off they go. Back at Gus's shop, Crockett and Tubbs ask who was with him in Daytona, and Gus's wife and kids are there. You know, he kind of scurries them off, and Gus says, digging up the past is dangerous. Crockett again hears, putting the screws to him to get a name. Tommy Barkley is what Gus gives them. Tim, what do they do with this new name?
So with this new name, Trudy comes back to Crockett and Castile and says, Tommy was killed in prison, right, so it seemed like it was a dead end. Crockett says that Gus had not heard from him in 6 years. No wonder he didn't know about it. Crockett is pissed. He is also wondering if something he did in the past will get someone killed soon. Back at Gus's shop, his wife is mad about the past being brought up and worried about the family. She had some pictures in hand, no idea what or who it was. Gus says he'll protect them. The past is the past. His wife and kids are going to her mom's, and she says she wants a decision by tomorrow. Then some chick in the car sees the family leave and then gets out, goes up to Gus, and pops some caps into him. He seemed to know this was coming. He gave the sign across before. The next day at the shop, the crime scene is being processed. Gus's wife is in the office. Sifting through evidence, Crockett sees the picture the wife tore up. He brings it to her and questions her. She says it's Gus's ex-wife. There was a bad person that dragged him down. And they never really said who the trigger woman was that killed Gus. Was it his ex? We don't know.
Yeah, we're assuming it's the ex. And is the ex the person we're going to see soon? It wasn't really defined. It was assumed.
It was assumed.
So we're at OCB here. And Switek is giving Crockett and Tubbs info on the weapon used. And then Crockett is pretty much lamenting that whoever the killer is wants to see Hackman fry. Castillo questions the picture slash postcard or whatever. It's postmarked Stuart, Florida, which is Switek's old stomping grounds before he came to Miami Vice. And he knows where the location of a photo is. And he said it was a food truck outside of a baseball stadium, but food trucks are mobile. How do you know?
He called it a rolling roach coach.
Rolling,
I believe.
Right. Well, it's a food truck. I mean, that's what food trucks are now, but it's obvious. How does he know it's still going to be there, right?
Right.
He knew where it used to be, so whatever. It's kind of like some barbecue place.
The clam trap.
Crockett and Tubbs, they've got to move fast because time is of the essence here. So they once again go to see Waldman, and they see they need a little bit more time and a little bit more leeway. Obviously, someone's throwing roadblocks their way. Waldman insists that nobody and no evidence isn't going to work. And he says this is why the death penalty is needed. Pretty much Crockett slams his comment as campaign rhetoric, because don't forget he's running for office here. When Crockett and Tubbs are walking away, Crockett says something just ain't right. And we'll find out soon.
Because Crockett and Tubbs make their way to Stuart, Florida, and they visit, I believe her name was Felicia, Felicia's clam trap. Tubbs starts to get out of the car. Crockett says, wait. Inside the clam trap, the lady, the ex, Felicia, says she doesn't like the look of their car, and some dude says, I don't either, make the call. Some lady makes a call, so she makes the call. As Croc and Tubbs get out of car, when she comes out of the food truck, a bunch of FBI agents pull up. The agents also take this lady and Tommy Barkley, who they notice is suddenly alive, out of the truck and place them into a squad. Not in cuffs, so obviously protected. Back at OCB, Crockett is obviously pissed about the recent hijinks and explains how the fake death leads to Tommy cooking clams. Castillo says Tommy's under protection and is the FBI's most prized canary. Crockett questions why he would let his pal fry.
The guy caps a 20-year career of major league theft by supposedly blocking bullets in a prison riot, only to turn up 3 years later frying clams out in Stewart.
Barkley's on the witness protection program.
What? The prison death was fictionalized?
The FBI's most prized canary. Helped bring down entire networks. Fences, money launderers.
Well, that's fine. But that doesn't explain why he's letting his buddy go to the chair.
Maybe Hackman figured into the Fed's plan.
Doesn't follow. Barkley's got enough names and dates not to feed him Hackman.
So now we have a montage of the prison, the electric chair room, Tommy's place, kind of going back and forth. Hackman is being fed his last meal. I didn't get a look at what he had, but it's nothing. Wasn't anything big like you would hear recently, like five steaks, couple cheeseburgers, apple pie, stuff like that. And he's getting his head shaved. I didn't know they did that, but I guess it makes sense for conductivity.
They did do that for the chair, yes.
Gotcha. Zap, zappity zap. Got to make sure you got good contact. Mm-hmm. Hackman wants to give a guard his watch as appreciation, pretty much for being a nice guy. Obviously, you can't accept it even back then. So Crockett and Tubbs motor up to in the Scarab to Tommy's place. Crockett has a pistol at a ready just in case. Crockett has a walk-in motion detector that they don't see hidden in the brush, kind of. Crockett opens the door. I think he was going to have the jimmy up, but it was just open anyways. And he opens the door to Tommy on the ground, pulling his shotgun. Tubbs does the same to Tommy outside. And then there's a lady I'm thinking up on the roof here. She does the same to Tubbs. So we've got this catch-22 situation here. I think Tommy said something like, they're either cops or thieves. Tommy eases up and clams up once Crockett identifies who they are. And then we're going back here in the montage. Hackman's being prepped for the execution here, doing his Ricker impression. Crockett walks and talks with Tommy outside. And when I say he walks and talks, he literally lays a smackdown on him. Literally. And he also gives him swimming lessons in his pool. Jogging your memory here, pal. What do you know? What are you going to tell me, right? What do you hear? What do you say? And he explains one call to Chicago is going to make him dead within 6 hours. He now knows, all of a sudden, who killed Frankel? Some man named DeSantis. He didn't show up for the trial because of Felicia. I guess she's that good, huh? He even said so. Mm-hmm. So back at the prison, Hackman seems to be getting nervous in some waiting room here or some cell or something. He could tell his eyes are kind of going back and forth. So what do we see with the governor here, Tim?
So now Crockett and Tubbs essentially crashed a lunch between Waldman and governor, and they're hosting at Waterside, which is pretty cool. Crockett tells the governor they have depositions that exonerate Hackman. Waldman suggests going through the proper channels, but the governor says there's no time. And I think he said, this guy's only got a couple hours to live. Let's dispense with protocol. And then we're guessing the next day at Waldman's office, Crockett shows up and Waldman shows he's down in the polls because of the exoneration of Hackman. Tom doesn't care about right or wrong. Just that his career is over.
Sounds like a typical politician on that one, huh?
Mm-hmm, no doubt.
So now we're finally here at the prison. Crockett and Tubbs pull up at the prison, probably back door or something like that. Crockett is kind of, I put euphoric, but I don't know if he's euphoric really, but I guess at least pleased that he saved an innocent man from death. Hackman's let out here, and Crockett says he's just doing his job. And then Hackman's like, yeah, like I knew you would. Then the eyes open on Crockett. He's like, what? Kind of, what do you mean? And then we see Tommy and this chick pull up, all happy in a convertible, and they're all smiling to Hackman, and it's obvious that Gus was paid for his false confession since he was dying anyways, and his family is taken care of. Hackman then confirms that he did indeed kill Frankel. Crockett here was played, obviously.
Didn't expect to see you here. Thanks, Crockett.
Just doing my job.
Like I knew you would. Gus was dying. He wanted his family to be cared for. I bought his confession.
You killed Frankel.
Yeah. I won't be needing this anymore. Maybe you can use it.
IMDb and the ratings give this an 8.5 out of a 10. The highest rating for an episode this season, and rightfully so. Tim, your thoughts, sir?
And it might be all-time highest to this point. And I definitely agree with this rating and give this a big thumbs up. You know, the plot centers around the OCB team receiving a tip that a death row inmate who killed Crockett's Parker Frankel may be innocent. The team is in a race against time and has only 48 hours to prove or disprove a recanted statement before inmate Hackman goes to the chair. What complicated matters was the pro-death penalty Waldman, who convicted Hackman, is running for higher office and opposes Crockett and Tubbs' investigation. You can really start to feel the intensity of this episode heat up as the scenes shifted back and forth between the investigation and Hackman being prepped for the chair, which was ever so looming in the background of many pan scenes. What made this great was that in the end, Crockett and the entire OCB team was duped. They freed a killer who actually did it.
Yes, very good episode. Definitely worthy of the 8.5 for sure, I think. This was a solid episode with a great story, good characters to play it out. And to me, Hackman kind of seemed like if anybody watched MASH, he seemed to me like the wounded soldier in the Quo Vadis Captain Chandler episode. Basically, this wounded soldier was so shell-shocked from doing what he's doing that he claimed he was Jesus, and he's done with killing on the battlefield. Basically, the blank stare, monotone, talking in, you know, peaceful voices and stuff like that. And then when he got shaved, he looked like the character from the movie Powder, maybe 15, 20 years ago. He's basically the same, like bald and all that. But speaking of MASH, Gus here. Speaking of MASH, Gus here was one of the cooks in a couple of episodes of MASH. I definitely picked this out before I researched it because of the way this guy talks and delivers his lines. He doesn't really look at it. He's shuffling off, doing things, kind of going back and forth. And let me put you a quick clip here in one of the episodes of MASH.
Simply soaking the bread into the froth. Do you care to pinch it or shall I?
But anyways, if you know, you know. Let's see. Crockett pretty much, yeah, he did get conned by the twist of fate and morality. And kind of going back, you know, basically he did this because he was being moral, like going back to Lieutenant Rodriguez. Buy the book, Sonny, right? Buy the book. Mm-hmm. So that's what he was doing. He had to go on the testimony, even though it was a paid-for lie. The testimony of Gus to get Hackman freed. So there we go. And because by the book, he was technically innocent of the crime. But I'm also thinking, okay, why didn't Crockett relay to the DA the fact that Hackman admitted to killing others? Okay, you may be innocent of this one. Well, guess what? You're still going to stay in now for this others that you allegedly said. So let's check that out.
And anyway, he kind of said that.
Again, very small appearance by Zito. No lines. Just wait for the next two episodes. And let's check out the music for this episode. We have We Do What We're Told. Awesome, awesome tune by Peter Gabriel. That's when Crockett is driving to the prison to meet Hackman. And the end sequence when Hackman leaves prison. And then we've got Morir Soñado by Fernando Villanueva. I'm sure I butchered that. That's when we're in the auto shop with Gus. And then Standing on the Outside by Meatloaf. That's when Albiro is killed. And Hackman's last request.
And Mark, there was no Jan Hammer music featured in this episode.
Thank you. Hello? Yeah, we're taking over here. We're taking over. This is Beelzebub.
And this is Beetlejuice, and we got the comm.
We got the comm. We're taking over. Mark and Tim, they're taking a break. So we're going to take it over for the goofs, the fun facts, the locations, and the trivia. So, Beetlejuice, how you been? You know, it's Halloween here. Got to get ready. It's going to be in a couple of weeks here. So what you been up to?
I've got our candy all stocked away for the kiddies when they come to the door. Not much, just wreaking havoc throughout the world. And
I've noticed that lately. So anyway, yeah, I've been, I haven't really been doing much, just kind of keeping low key, you know, chilling out. But you know what's coming up next year?
What's that?
The election. Election in the United States of America. You think it was fun last time? This shit's gonna hit the fan. So anyway, well, it's been fun, but let's get into it. Let's get out of here. And hey, I'd like to give a shout out to Marina from Vice and Easy Podcast. You know, we didn't get to go on her, so we'll screw something up in post production on your podcast, Marina. So, you know, thanks for the invite, pal. All right, Beetlejuice, why don't you go ahead and take it away for the first one here?
Sure thing, Beelzebub. We have our first goof, where the execution chamber is clearly set. The electric chair is out of the open in the same room as the benches where the witnesses would sit. In reality, executions would always take place in a separate room to the witnesses, with glass separating them from the condemned. Yeah, we wouldn't want any arcing of the electricity to zap somebody out there. Wouldn't that be great?
That sounds like something you would do. The first location we got, 3842 Leafy Way, up in Coconut Grove. That's Frankel's house, where he bit the big one. That's in the opening scene.
Our second location is Culver Prison, 14,000 Northwest 41st Street in Miami, which is the Rayford Prison exteriors.
And our last location here is the Miami Stadium, 2301 Northwest 10th Avenue out in Miami. That's where the clam trap was located, the food truck. And this is now an apartment complex where I'm sure just as seedy stuff is going on.
Rolling roach coach.
I'm sure there's a lot of roaches in those apartments now. You wanna take over the trivia? Let's do the trivia for these chumps too. Mark and Tim, they can go drink some beer or whatever. What's his?
Okay. Do the trivia. In the last episode, we asked, in one of the scenes when Romano's being called out, what did Crockett say Romano did, then forgot to do? He said, you took a walk on the wild side, only you forgot to come back.
Actually, that wasn't us that asked it, dumbass. That was Tim and Mark.
Well, whatever.
All right, this show's trivia question is... I'm gonna get you. When the OCB's team was surveilling the church, Gina gives Switek the license plate for Pepe Ferrer. What was the plate number, and how did Switek say it when entering it into the computer? You can post your answers on this episode's Facebook post, or you can email us at mandevice@dog.com. Don't email us. We're not gonna get it because we ain't gonna be here. You're going to Tim and Mark. I don't get into that crap. So, Beelzebub, well, good to see you again, cousin. Have fun with whatever you're going to do. And like I said, I got the election to take care of, so. You're screwed.
Wreaking havoc in the world.
You got to vote for one of them. It's a two-party system, don't forget.
And we've arrived at Nerd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, where we hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker a little. In both the world of Miami Vice and our current world at large, we encounter many challenges we work to overcome. In the interest of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and our social media, we'd like to offer some parting thoughts, a quote, phrase, words, an encouragement, or a funny quip to you, our listeners. Because without you, our friends, we'd just be talking to ourselves. And we say friends because that's what we consider everyone who's listening and follows our social. This episode's quote is, "Progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything." And that's from George Bernard Shaw.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us on this review. We hope you found this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to our podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated on our latest episodes. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us. And if you have a spare moment, we would be incredibly grateful if you could leave us a rating and review on those channels. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. We'll catch you next time on the Vice of Miami Podcast on Show 60, covering Episode 12, Down for the Count, Part 1. Now,
Happy Halloween!